Blog Talk Radio. This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Russian forces in Ukraine faced fresh accusations of war crimes on Thursday as UN-appointed independent human rights investigators released the latest findings of their ongoing probe. According to the Commission of Inquiry on Ukraine, set up 1 year ago at the request of the Human Rights Council, Russian troops committed a wide range of violations across the country, many of which are war crimes. These included attacks with explosive weapons in populated areas, willful killings of civilians, unlawful confinement, torture, rape and other sexual violence, as well as unlawful transfers and deportations of children. In addition, Russian attacks against Ukraine's energy grid left millions without power in freezing temperatures. Here's Commission Chairperson Eric Mercer.
The Commission has also found that the waves of attacks from 10 October 2022 on Ukraine's energy-related infrastructure by the Russian armed forces and the use of torture by Russian authorities may amount to crimes against humanity. The Commission recommends further investigations.
Rooted through new hubs and expanded criminal networks, cocaine trafficking has made a dramatic comeback following a slowdown caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, UNODC, said on Thursday. Alongside heightened criminal network activity, UNODC's new report has found record levels of production and a 35% jump in coca cultivation from 2020 to 2021. The supply surge matches a steep growth in demand, with many regions showing a steady rise in cocaine users over the past decade. While the cocaine market remains concentrated in the Americas and parts of Europe, the report warns that there is a strong potential for a large expansion in Africa and Asia. Uzbekistan's human rights reforms have a lot of work still ahead, despite progress in some areas, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk, said on Wednesday. Speaking at the end of his official visit to Uzbekistan, Mr. Turk called for action to close the gender gap, civil society participation reforms, and media freedom guarantees. The UN rights chief expressed hope that the country will swiftly join an international mechanism outlawing torture, noting that actions always speak louder than words. The High Commissioner also reiterated calls for a transparent and independent review of events in July 2022 in the city of Nukus, where 18 people died and hundreds were injured in clashes between protesters and security forces. At the same time, Mr. Turk recognized that human rights thinking and action have become more ingrained into the country's fabric and society. He praised Uzbekistan's cooperation with international human rights mechanisms and highlighted significant legal reforms in recent years, as well as progress on ending forced labor, addressing statelessness, and repatriating over 500 women and children from camps in Syria and elsewhere. Dominika Tomaszewska-Mortimer, UN News.
How are you doing this afternoon? It is rather cold here today. The temperatures are rising. However, we reached a low of 21 degrees here in northeast Kansas this morning, and the temperature is rising. We're expecting another cold evening of 15 degrees. Coming up after the latest headlines of this morning from Democracy Now!
For radio as secular as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
Attorney Chris Lyne talks about why public school coaches can't pray at students.
Then, neurologist William Bernstein talks about his fascinating book,
The Delusions of Crowds, Why People Go Mad in Groups.
That's right, that's coming up after these headlines from this morning's Democracy Now!
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Wall Street's largest banks have moved to prop up the ailing San Francisco-based First Republic Bank. After the sudden collapse of regional bank Signature and SVB last week sparked fears of a financial meltdown, Bank of America, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo will each make $5 billion in uninsured deposits into First Republic, while seven other Wall Street firms will deposit a further $10 billion. The Federal Reserve reports Wall Street firms have received about $300 billion in emergency lending over the past week, roughly half what the Fed loaned banks during the 2008 financial crisis. On Capitol Hill, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen sought to reassure the Senate Finance Committee over the stability of U.S. financial markets.
I can reassure the members of the committee that our banking system is sound and that Americans can feel confident that their deposits will be there when they need them.
Yellen defended the Biden administration's decision to allow all depositors at SVB and Signature to recover their assets after the bank's collapse using money from the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. That's despite the fact that over 93% of assets at SVB and Signature were not insured by the FDIC. Under questioning from senators, Yellen admitted smaller banks that fail might not get the same treatment. The United Nations says there's encouraging momentum in the effort to end the war in Yemen after more than 8 years of conflict. U.S. and Saudi officials said Iran has agreed to stop arming Houthis in Yemen as part of the recent China broker deal to restore diplomatic ties between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Here in the United States, Senators Chris Murphy and Mike Lee introduced a bipartisan resolution this week that would require the U.S. to report on Saudi human rights abuses with the goal of ending U.S. arms sales to the kingdom. The humanitarian catastrophe in Yemen has left over 17 million people in need of assistance. The Polish president, Andrzej Duda, said Thursday his government will ship 4 Soviet-era MiG fighter jets to Ukraine, becoming the first nation since Russia's invasion to meet Ukraine's request to deliver warplanes. Following that announcement, Slovakia's government said it would transfer 13 MiG fighters to Ukraine. Finland, the Netherlands, and other NATO members are considering similar transfers. In Geneva, the UN-mandated Independent International Commission of Inquiry on Ukraine said Thursday Russia's committed wide-ranging war crimes in Ukraine, including possible crimes against humanity. Eric Moos, of the chair of the commission.
The commission has concluded that the Russian authorities have committed numerous violations of international humanitarian law and international human rights law, in addition to a wide range of war crimes, including the war crime of excessive incidental death, injury or damage, willful killings, torture, inhuman treatment, unlawful confinement, rape, as well as unlawful transfer and deportation.
China's foreign minister said Thursday he called his Russian counterpart to urge a diplomatic solution to the Ukraine war, warning the conflict could spiral out of control. The warning came as China announced President Xi Jinping will travel to Moscow early next week to hold talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Australia has agreed to purchase 220 Tomahawk cruise missiles from the United States at a cost of nearly $1 billion. The U.S. State Department approved the sale Thursday, just days after President Biden formally announced plans to sell nuclear-powered submarines to Australia in a bid to counter China's influence in the Indo-Pacific. The Biden administration is threatening to ban TikTok if its Chinese owners refuse to sell their stake in the U.S. version of the hugely popular video sharing app. TikTok has been the target of increasing scrutiny by some lawmakers who say it's a threat to national security and that its owner, Beijing-based ByteDance, could use Americans' personal data. On Thursday, the UK became the latest country to announce TikTok would be banned on government devices following similar bans by the US, Canada, and the European Union. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed 4 Palestinians, including a teenager, in a raid on the city of Jenin on Thursday. The deaths bring the number of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces this year alone to at least 83. The Palestinian Authority and Israel are scheduled to hold security talks in Egypt over the weekend, which will include officials from Egypt, Jordan, and the United States. Fresh protests erupted across France Thursday after President Emmanuel Macron bypassed Parliament and invoked executive powers to push through a highly contested law raising the retirement age from 62 to 64. Macron took the drastic step after it appeared he might not have the necessary support in the National Assembly. Lawmakers booed and sang the national anthem while holding up protest signs and signaled Macron could soon face a no-confidence vote by opposition parties. Massive protests and prolonged strikes have rocked France over the past 2 months as union leaders vowed to keep up the disruptions. This is a teacher speaking from Thursday's protests in Paris.
It's proof that the president's party is a minority in parliament, but he is also a minority in public opinion. The responsibility is on President Macron. After he refused to have dialogue with the unions, he decided to pass this law by force. This law, which is unfair and unpopular, will result in people working more to get less.
In the United Kingdom, unions representing medical workers, including nurses and paramedics, have agreed to a tentative deal on pay raises that would recover ground lost to inflation. Union leaders hailed the deal as a historic victory, capping months of rolling strikes by thousands of workers at the National Health Service. About 100,000 civil servants and others, including junior doctors at NHS, remain in a long-running dispute over pay, pension, and job security. Meanwhile, the UK government says it's agreed to intensive talks on teacher pay and classroom sizes, with an estimated 200,000 teachers in England and Wales who hit picket lines this week for a three-day strike action. Teachers were among tens of thousands of people who marched to the streets of London Wednesday.
I can't sit back and watch education decimated. It's not just about teacher pay. We're talking about funding for schools. Our children deserve so much better than this. They are our future.
In Greece, riot police deployed tear gas and sound grenades against protesters Thursday as workers held a general strike amidst ongoing anger over last month's rail disaster that killed 57 people. The strike grounded flights, halted public transport, kept ferries docked, canceled classes, and left public hospitals running with emergency staff. Rail workers say government neglect and privatization led to the decay of the train system. Back in the United States, in East Palestine, Ohio, newly released data shows soil around the site of February's Norfolk Southern train derailment contains levels of dioxin hundreds of times higher than what's considered safe. That's according to The Guardian, which had the data reviewed by former EPA officials and other chemical experts who said dioxins found in East Palestine were extremely concerning, even if they're below the federal cleanup threshold. The findings also contradicted assertions by the EPA, which told Congress last week dioxin levels were very low. In 2010, when the EPA found dioxin poses cancer risks, the agency tried to have those limits lowered, but the Obama administration kept the higher threshold in place. In related news, two trains operated by BNSF derailed in Arizona and Washington State Thursday. In Washington, cleanup teams were deployed after some 5,000 gallons of fuel leaked into the Skokomish Tribal Reservation. North Dakota Supreme Court ruled Thursday the state's abortion ban should remain on hold while a lawsuit over its constitutionality is resolved. North Dakota's anti-abortion trigger law was supposed to take effect once Roe v. Wade was overturned, but a lower court temporarily blocked it last summer, arguing abortion rights are protected by the state constitution. The legislation makes it a felony to perform an abortion with limited exceptions in cases of rape, incest, or medical emergency. And the Los Angeles Times announced Thursday it will no longer use the word internment to describe the mass imprisonment of over 120,000 people of Japanese ancestry during World War II. It will instead use terms like incarceration, imprisonment, or detention. It's the latest step taken by the paper to rectify the harm it caused during the war when it called for the incarceration of Japanese and Japanese Americans. The LA Times issued a formal editorial apology 6 years ago. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And as a reminder to listeners, Democracy Now! Is a one-hour-long program. You're only listening to the headlines at the beginning of the first 10 or 15 minutes of every weekday show. You can watch the complete program, Kansas City area. Listeners can watch the complete program of Democracy Now! At 7 a.m. in the morning at channel 19.2, at your local Kansas City PBS affiliate. Also, at 8 o'clock, it airs again on FM radio, courtesy KKFI 90.1 FM at 8 a.m. On your FM radio tuner. So check it out. You get two chances at watching the complete one-hour show of Democracy Now! Now coming up, our featured program for Friday, Free Thought Friday, Free Thought Radio out of Madison, Wisconsin.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio and happy spring to be. This is the last week of winter 2022-23, and we're glad to be springing forward.
And I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and this is the March 16th, 2023 edition of Free Thought Radio. Grant Blaschka with Audio for the Arts is engineering in the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio in Freethought Hall, the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And Freethought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we've been broadcasting since 2006. And the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which produces the show, has been around nationally since 1978. And we have two purposes: to educate the public, that's you, about non-theism. Our members are atheists, agnostics, skeptics, humanists, whatever you like to call yourselves, personally free from religion. And we work to protect and defend the secular and godless Constitution of the United States to keep religion out of government. And you can join us at ffrf.org.
How do we explain mass religious delusions? Today, we're going to talk about the delusions of crowds, why people go mad in groups. That's the title of a book by William Bernstein, who will be our guest in the second half of today's show. This week is the anniversary of the Broadway composer Stephen Sondheim. He was born March 22, 1930. Sondheim was a lifelong atheist. Listen for some of Sondheim's music during the breaks today, including The Follies Overture, Send in the Clowns, Last Minute, and Comedy Tonight.
You can read about the lives and works of historic and current freethinkers at FFRF's Free Thought of the Day website at ffrf.org/day. Today, for example, is the anniversary of the birth of James Madison, born March 16, 1751. This Sunday is the 100th anniversary of the birth of Dr. Henry Morgenthaler, born March 19, 1923, a physician who served time in prison, many times in prison, in his ultimately successful quest to legalize abortion in Canada, a true hero.
That Free Thought of the Day site also commemorates significant events in Free Thought and state church history, such as the March 18, 1890 Wisconsin Supreme Court decision, Weiss versus the District Board, which outlawed religion in public schools.
Yeah, known as the Edgerton Bible case. And this is a stirring concurring opinion by Justice H.S. Orton. There is no such source and cause of strife, quarrel, fights, malignant opposition, persecution, and war, and all evil in the state as religion. let it once enter our civil affairs, our government would soon be destroyed. Let it once enter our common schools, they would be destroyed. That was such stirring wording, and I cannot imagine any judge today in the whole country who would be this insightful and this strong in wording about the need to keep religion out of government and public schools.
Besides our radio show that you're listening to, we also have a television studio here at Free Thought Hall. Most Wednesdays at noon central, we air FFRF's Ask an Atheist on Facebook Live. This week, the topic was manufacturing the clerical predator. FFRF attorney Sam Grover was joined by Peter Isley, a victim of priestly abuse, and joined by founding member of SNAP. He's the founding member of SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. And he was joined by Sarah Pearson, also a victim of clerical abuse, who is with the group Nate's Mission. And she's the producer of a new film called Manufacturing the Clerical Predator.
So they all talked about the widespread problem of sexual abuse by priests and the reluctance of authorities still today to deal with the problem. Let's listen into a little of that conversation.
And our concern was always like the next kid. I mean, there's a child.
Yeah.
And what someone's got to stop this. And then over the years to find out how complicit other social entities and elites were. You cannot get away with this, with so many sex offenders moving them around, if you do not have the cooperation of law enforcement, which they did. It's in the files, like in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Know all about it. Law enforcement, prominent Catholics in the business community. And this cost a lot of money to keep this up.
A lot of people hear about the abuse that's taken place in the past,
mm-hmm.
and they think, well, that's over.
Sure. That is a really common misconception about this. And that's something that we're trying to combat. Abuse is still going on. There are still abusive priests who have been put back into ministry after allegations were made against them. That has happened more frequently now in the United States, even in recent years. But there's no universal zero-tolerance law in the Catholic Church. On the books, the Church as a global organization, there's no law that says, you know, if you've been accused of abusing children, or if you've, you know, raped or abused a child, you have to be taken out of ministry. You can see it happening all the time, where priests with multiple accusations are still in ministry, and then new allegations are still emerging. So it's certainly not over, not here in the U.S. and not abroad in all of the continents in which the Catholic Church is operating and spreading and growing.
So you can watch that Ask an Atheist episode right now on FFF's YouTube channel. Look for the Ask an Atheist playlist.
And a new episode of Ask an Atheist airs almost every Wednesday at 12 noon central on Facebook Live on FFRF's Facebook page, where you can ask questions during this show. You can find it at facebook.com/4FFRF, the number 4FFRF.
Gee, it seems like we could do that and find an easier way to promote that, Dan. On our TV show, Free Thought Matters, this week we talk with the veteran actor of stage, television, and film, Madison Arnold, who for more than 50 years has appeared. He's a character actor. He's appeared in dozens of TV shows, has acted on Broadway in many movies with stars like Al Pacino, John Wayne, Harrison Ford, Robert De Niro, and even in a 1965 movie featuring Yoko Ono. Madison Arnold has been a longtime member. He joined in 1980, and he became a lifetime member in 1995.
Wow, like 40 years. Madison Arnold has played dozens of different roles, including a priest, and I asked him about that.
So, Madison, I know you're a professional, but was it hard for you as an atheist to play the role of a priest?
No. Not at all. No harder than playing a killer. Both of them are remote from me. I did have to learn for the scene that I did from a priest the ritual for dealing with the dead body, which was strange because I showed up around 6 o'clock in the morning somewhere in the Lower East Side, and they got a real priest there to help me out, and I see this guy standing there. He looked like somebody sent from central casting about a horror priest, you know, with this stern look on his face. The first thing he says to me, so you're an atheist. Somehow, because the AD had called me and said, do you know anything about religious ritual, Catholic ritual? I said, no, I'm an atheist. And he obviously told the priest. And the priest was standing there like he just met the devil. Really, literally. And it was very scary. And he looks at me and says, so you're an atheist. And I, you know, I said to him, yes, I mean, you're a priest. That was the end of the conversation. He showed me how to do with this schmat that you put on you when you're saying something over a dead body.
That's a very entertaining interview with an actor who has many stories to tell. You can watch that episode of Free Thought Matters also right now on our YouTube channel, FFF's YouTube channel, and look for the Free Thought Matters playlist.
And you might be able to watch it on TV if you happen to live in one of the 13 major cities where Free Thought Matters is broadcast. You can watch it every Sunday morning. And for stations and times, check out ffrf.org/freethoughtmatters or simply go to our webpage and look under the news dropdown for Free Thought Matters.
So there's a lot of news, and I'm going to start it, a lot of news for FFRF and also nationally. We just announced our four essay competitions for high school seniors through grad students, and this is a total of $45,000 in prize money. Each contest has a total of $16,500 in prizes, and actually we give optional honorable mentions of $200, so we usually do more than that, and so we have one for college-bound high school seniors. We have one for BIPOC, Black Indigenous Students of Color, Glad to be Godless. The student essay competition prompt for high schoolers is Why I'm Proudly a Gen Z Nun. We have the ongoing college competition up to age 24. This is a fun one. What I would tell Marjorie Taylor Greene about the harm of Christian nationalism, write her a letter. And then for graduate students through age 30 or quote-unquote older undergrads, 25 to 30, we are asking you to write about, is secularism the savior of American democracy? You can go to our website under the events link and look for the student essays, and you can find out where to apply. It's an online application, all of that information at our website. So we hope you will let students in your life know about these very good opportunities. They're all due June 1st.
Our attorneys are making many complaints around the country about violations of state-church separation. And one of our federal complaints is we're calling for FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, to rescind a proposed $1 million plus handout for a Kentucky church tornado shelter. The funds will be used to build a church, and we think that is unconstitutional.
It is unconstitutional.
We are also complaining about a South Carolina city council in the city hall, and at the courthouse, I'm sorry, they have a Ten Commandments monument up on the wall. We're sending a letter of complaint that they remove that and display it in a more appropriate location. Over in Oklahoma, we had a victory. We convinced, one of our attorneys convinced Oklahoma town to remove a derogatory religious message. There's a Christian cross, and then there's a veterans memorial. One died for your soul. The other died for your freedom. So the attorney sent a letter saying that they have removed that signage.
So we sent a national action alert, if you have not yet contacted Walgreens to tell them you're going to move your business elsewhere. We urge you to do that. When they said that they were going to not make, they've asked for certification to do mifepristone, which is part of the medication abortion two-drug regimen. If they get certification from the FDA, they capitulated to some Republican attorneys general in states where abortion is legal and said they would not allow it in person or over the mail, and we hope they're going to change that their tune on that one. And we are also watching, and we have a statement up about this frightening situation where a Christian nationalist judge put in by Trump, who used to work for the First Liberty Institute, a right-wing Christian group, is about to pronounce medication abortion ban.
at least of Missy Pristone, and you've probably been seeing the headlines about it. It's a trumped-up case where he was judge-shopped. Anti-abortion group created a coalition right there in Amarillo, and they're suing to try to get the FDA to change the pronouncement that Missy Pristone is safe. They pronounced this 22 years ago. This is professed interference with the FDA, and this is a judge practicing medicine without a license, and there will be more news about that soon.
Our attorney, Ryan Jane, here at FFRF, has written to various federal departments in a formal comment on the Biden administration is proposing some new rules for faith-based providers. They get public money, faith-based providers, and the rules have been very relaxed, and Biden is tightening those up, requiring that religious service providers give clear notice of the rights of beneficiaries, that they have an alternative provider to request to do so. So these are good rules, these are better rules, and we are supporting those rules from FEMA.
Yeah, and you'll be hearing about it if you're a member. We want you to support those rules too. This is undoing Trump. After the break, FFRF attorney Chris Lyne is going to join us and tell us all about the continuing controversy over University of Colorado coach Deion Sanders imposing his religion on players. We hope not, actually. And then we will talk with author William J. Bernstein about the delusions of crowds, why people go mad in groups.
We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have in studio with us attorney Chris Lyne, FFRF attorney Chris Lyne. Nice to see you again, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And you're very busy, as always, and you've been at the center of a big controversy involving a praying coach. So why don't you update us about what's going on with Coach Deion Sanders at the University of Colorado?
Yeah, someone reported to us that Deion Sanders had been leading prayer with staff members, leading students in prayer. We had a couple of videos. There's a video at one staff meeting where he basically has all the other coaches and all the students there, participate in a prayer before they start.
He's the head coach?
Yep, he's the new head coach at University of Colorado, Boulder. So we just wrote to the university and let them know, hey, this is going on. Here's a video. This is inappropriate. Can you please make sure he's not using his position to impose his religion on the football program? And we got a really good response right away from the university. They said they talked to him. They said he was receptive and understood that what he was doing was inappropriate and that he'd be abiding by university policies going forward.
So it seemed like great. Everything was over, but it's been, what, Fox TV and religious groups going
after this? Yeah, immediately after we sort of announced that this all had happened and it ended well, a lot of conservative groups were reporting on it, but it didn't really pick up steam again and really start hitting the news until First Liberty decided to jump in and write a letter to the university saying...
Who was First Liberty?
First Liberty, the Christian right group that sort of defends Christian privilege around the country. So they... Seeing that, a Christian had stopped using his position to impose prayer on people obviously disturbed them, so they immediately wrote a letter to the university saying, hey, you need to let Deion Sanders impose his prayer on everyone.
And so then that brought a cascade of news stories and a really awful editorial in the Gazette, the daily newspaper in Colorado Springs. I have written a letter rebutting it. I don't know if they're going to print it. And Hemet Mehta wrote such a good piece about that.
Yeah, there have been a lot of really bad takes. One person had said we had lost because Deion Sanders is still posting religious messages on his Twitter.
His personal Twitter.
Exactly.
He can do that.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people really don't get it.
But and to get it, to help us get it, we have a clip of, what is this of?
Yeah, this is him praying with his former team. I can't remember, it was like Jackson State University before he moved to Colorado. This is just him leading his team in prayer at maybe a practice or something like that.
Read after me. Lord, I love you.
Lord, I love you.
Lord, I thank you.
Lord, I thank you.
Lord, I magnify you.
Lord, I magnify you.
I glorify you.
I glorify you.
Keep us.
Keep us.
God.
God.
Lead us.
Lead us.
Protect us.
Protect us.
Correct us.
Correct us.
Thank you, Lord.
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 For everything.
For everything.
For all things.
For all things.
For more to come.
For more to come.
Without you.
Without you.
I wouldn't be.
I wouldn't be.
A thing.
A thing.
A thing.
A thing.
A thing.
A thing.
A thing. In Jesus' name.
In Jesus' name.
Amen.
Amen.
So I think anybody listening to that could understand why students at a public university should not be exposed to that, should not be expected to participate, should not be expected to pray to play.
Right. I mean, that was an interactive prayer. I mean, far from any sort of private personal prayer on behalf of the coach, he's calling and having a response from the team. I mean, it's hard to imagine. What do you do, I guess, besides just not responding? I mean, you just have to stand there as a player. If you're a non-Christian player or a non-religious player, that would just be a really tough situation.
I saw that clip, and there's like, what, maybe 50 or 60 players in a circle. Were they all just devout Christians, or were they just following their coach's orders?
Well, they're clearly following their coach's orders. In a circle, you can see who's not participating, and then you displease your coach, and you displease your fanatical team members, and you're out.
Yeah,
right?
Even if, I mean, we never heard about from any of these team members, but we wouldn't expect to. They're not going to say anything, even if they think it's wrong. They're going to keep their mouth shut about it, which is the problem. They're being coerced into accepting this religion as a part of a public school program.
Oh. But to give credit where it's due, the University of Colorado has done the right thing. So has Sanders in
yep.
understanding he can't do this. And it's just the Christian nationalist out there that are trying to try to create trouble. But right now we have a firm victory.
Yep, this was a win all around, a win for the university. Coach Sanders can still, in his personal capacity, be as religious as he wants. He just can't use his position to put that onto the players. Everything is great except this right-wing group coming in and saying, hey, there's a problem here. Even Deion Sanders has not addressed, you know, their complaint. So they're trying to defend him, but he's not engaging with them at all on that.
So hopefully that will die down soon. And then you drafted a statement for the Freedom From Religion Foundation with an update about Coach Kennedy, another praying judge. So tell us what's going on there.
Praying coach. Coach Kennedy actually also weighed in on the Deion Sanders. He was on a right-wing show and, of course, is in defense of Deion Sanders because he's now the de facto spokesperson for praying coaches, you know, around the country, obviously. But no, we learned he was recently, as a part of finishing out that case, it was before the Supreme Court, Kennedy v. Bremerton, he was reinstated to the team. Now, he's not back with the players yet. That'll happen in a few months, but he is officially a member of the coaching staff again. And so we put out a warning, you know, particularly for students at Bremerton, that this court opinion, he won in court, but they said he was doing private prayer, which, as we know, is not the case. If he goes back and he's imposing religion on students, we encourage students to speak out and to fight and not give up their rights just because of this court case.
We sent
now,
them.
There's some similarities here that we should bring up, which is that he was defended by First Liberty Institute. We have a theme going.
The same group.
In the first segment, of course, we talked about Judge Kaczmarek, First Liberty guy who might be banning medication abortion. But the Supreme Court said that he could pray at the 50-yard line because they said that wasn't involving students after a game.
Right. So as long as it keeps not as long as he prays away from students, that's fine. But if he's going to start imposing his religion on students, that's not all right, and we need to help him do something about
it. Well, we know you're going to keep watch and see what happens, Chris.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Thanks for all your work and for your.
Thank you for having me on.
A good watchdog for State Church. We have to take a break, and then we're going to talk with William Bernstein, author of the book, The Delusions of Crowds.
Why People Go Mad in Groups.
I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. William J. Bernstein is a financial theorist, and he's also a neurologist. He researches in the field of modern portfolio theory. And he's published books for investors who want to manage their own equity portfolios. He has a PhD in chemistry and an MD, and he practiced neurology for many years. His best-selling books include The Birth of Plenty, How the Prosperity of the Modern World Was Created, and A Splendid Exchange, How Trade Shaped the World.
William Bernstein has a new book published in 2021 by Atlantic Monthly Press that describes and explains groupthink delusions, not only in the financial arena, but also in religion. The book is called The Delusions of Crowds, Why People Go Mad in Groups. It's a fascinating, well-documented history of group manias with an evolutionary explanation for the phenomena. So we have William Bernstein on the phone with us today from Portland, Oregon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
So I just finished your book, and it really a fascinating, a broad read of the history of why people go mad when they're in groups. And I'm curious, you're a neurologist and a financial theorist. How did you come to write a book about the delusions of crowds?
Well, about 25 years ago, I read this book's predecessor, which is Charles Mackay's extraordinary memoirs of extraordinary popular delusions at the madness of crowds. And it was primarily about financial and religious manias. The most famous chapters in the book were the first three, which were about financial manias. And they were fascinating. It was the story of how entire societies in Holland and France and in England experienced absolute society-wide madness surrounding the delusion that everybody was going to get rich by investing in stocks or tulip futures. How we come to the word tulip mania.
And he was writing in the 1840s, right?
That's correct. And I thought it was an interesting book when I read it, which was in the early 1990s. But I thought, you know, it's not terribly relevant. I sort of thought it was like a bad B-movie about the Roman Empire. And I thought it might be interesting to live through a period like that, but I didn't think that was ever going to happen to me until about 3 or 4 years later, when lo and behold, in the late 1990s, we experienced the tech mania. And you couldn't go to a party or get into a cab and the driver would start talking to you about, you know, the stocks, the tech stocks that he was getting rich buying. And I realized that I had seen this play before, and I knew how it ended. And as someone who at the time was managing my own money, I was able to steer clear of the mania, and it saved my bacon. Huh. And the more I studied, you know, the field of finance, the more I realized that I was the first person who had read Mackay's book. And other people had read the book, too, in earlier eras, and it had saved them a lot of money, not the least of whom was Bernard Baruch, who wrote the introduction to the 1932 edition of the book. And so I sort of filed that away. And then, you know, about 8 or 9 years ago, when, along with everybody else, I was gobsmacked by the rise of the Islamic State, and particularly the ability of the Islamic State to attract people to fight and die in one of the worst places in the world, you know, in northern Syria and northern Iraq. And it turns out that they deployed the same end times religious narrative that's common to the other two Abrahamic religions, particularly evangelical Protestantism. And of course, Mackay had also written about that same sort of mania when he wrote about the witch trials and the Crusades. So I realized that I had to update Mackay's book to tie the two of them together.
So what's going on with this group mania, whether it's financial or religious? What is it about a group that makes people lose or abandon their reason?
Two basic phenomena. In the first place, human beings evolved to imitate each other. And all you have to think about is how mankind crossed the Bering Strait at the end of the Pleistocene, about 11,000 years or so ago, and very quickly established themselves in the New World from, you know, the wilds of Alaska, where they had to learn how to build kayaks and igloos, down through the Great Plains. They had to learn how to hunt bison. And then finally into South America, you know, where in the Amazon, native tribes to this day still make poison blowgun. And if you've never done any of those three things, if you've never built a kayak or hunt bison or built a poison blowgun, it's impossible to figure out how to do it all on your own. You have to imitate somebody else who figured it out. And so the ability to imitate and to survive in vastly different and changing environments got selected for by Mother Nature, probably as long ago as, you know, 200,000 or 300,000 years ago. Certainly the people who crossed the tribes who first crossed the Bering Strait didn't evolve it suddenly on their own. That had been an ability that had been present for a long time. So that's number one. It's our ability to imitate has real survival value and get selected for. Unfortunately, in the domains of both religion and finance, it can be profoundly maladaptive. Now, the other thing that proclivity that human beings have is our love of narratives. We prioritize narratives over facts and data. And of course, the two most compelling narratives you can come up with are, one is the story of the end of the world. We human beings tend to attend to bad news over good news. You know, if it bleeds, it leads. And that has obviously an evolutionary advantage as well, if you're attuned to danger and risk. And we also communicate by narratives. Now, what's the most compelling narrative in the world? Well, the most compelling narrative in the world is the story of how the world ends, which gets us into the thick of, you know, Protestant and Islamic and Jewish apocalypticism. And, you know, we see it in Eastern religions as well. What's the second most compelling narrative? It's that you're going to get effortlessly rich, okay? And so that's how we tie together the two different kinds of manias that I write about in the book.
So do you have any stock tips for us here? just kidding.
Since it's just you know, only a couple thousand, several thousand people listening to these podcasts, I can tell you. But as long as you promise not to tell anybody else,
no.
Which is to buy low and sell high. But
there you go.
So, well, your book is particularly timely with the Silicon Valley bank folding.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that most people don't realize about modern finance, which is that the modern capitalist system is profoundly unstable. Now, that instability comes with, you know, certain advantages, which are probably beyond the scope of your interview. But the bottom line is it's a very unstable system that sits on a high wire, you know, above a financial landscape that looks like the Grand Canyon. So if you're going to live and work in that high wire, which we all do, it helps to have a parachute. And that parachute consists of safe assets. And unfortunately, that was something that Silicon Valley Bank and the people who invested and deposited their money in that bank didn't think carefully enough about.
Now, the thing that is depressing, although, of course, I can see and agree, is that people greatly prefer stories to data and facts. So you say, when presented with facts and data that contradict our deeply held beliefs, we generally do not reconsider and alter those beliefs appropriately.
Yeah, that's something, it's a famous phenomenon called confirmation bias, which is, number one, that we tend to attend only to those facts and opinions that conform to our belief system. And number two, that, and more importantly, that we tend to suppress the things that contradict that belief system. And it's just the way we work. In neuropsychological terms, you know, neurophysiologists like to say that we have two cognitive systems. One is system one, which is the old our old reptilian brains, our limbic system, which react very fast. Okay. And then the second system is our system two, which is our rational facilities, which resides in the neocortex, which is a much more evolutionarily newer system. It's basically the covering of our brain, if you can think about the outer layers for the most part of our brain. And, you know, Danny Kahneman, the famous psychologist, has said that basically system two is merely the press agent for system one. So we come to moral conclusions and opinions that are based on our system one, and then we use our rational facilities, our system two, to simply rationalize what we emotionally believe.
Well, I guess that sums up the human condition.
So
yeah, it sure does.
So one of the things that I was really impressed with in your book is the explanation of what's happening with groupthink, how our brains function differently when we are part of a group than they do when we are thinking for ourselves. So we're going to have to take a break here, William. We're talking with William J. Bernstein. And when we come back from the break, I want to ask you about that, William. How and why do our brains work differently when we're in a group? I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, no gods, no masters. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And we're continuing our conversation with William J. Bernstein, author of many books. He is a financial theorist and he's a neurologist. And he combines all of that and more into a new book called The Delusions of Crowds, Why People Go Mad in Groups. And William, thanks for being with us today. And one thing I found fascinating in your book is your explanation and description of how people actually think differently when they're in a group than they do when they are individuals. For example, estimating the number of jelly beans in a jar, that kind of thing. I was fascinated by that. Can you explain a little bit of that difference?
Well, this goes back to an experiment which was done by an Englishman by the name of Francis Galton, who was a giant of statistics and actuarial science. And he went to a poultry fair sometime not too long before the turn of the 19th century. And there was an ox, and there was a contest that you were the attendees at the fair had to guess the weight of the dressed ox, which was the ox after it had been slaughtered and prepared for butchering. And several hundred estimates were provided, and the average of all of the estimates came out to be exactly 1 pound off the actual weight of the ox, which was more accurate than any single one of the estimates. And this is what, you know, James Surowiecki refers to as the wisdom of crowds. And the key thing about that little experiment that he did was that those estimates were arrived at independently. People weren't really talking to each other because they submitted them on a postcard so that, you know, the winner would be determined after the, you know, some weeks later after the ox had been dressed. And this is something that you see, which is that when people have independent judgments, the aggregate of those judgments can be very accurate. Now, as soon as people start communicating with each other, the accuracy goes out the window. So a very smart financial manager by the name of Joel Greenblatt did a very similar experiment with a bowl that contained 1,776 jelly beans, and he showed it to an elementary school class, and their average of their guesses was similarly accurate within a few jelly beans. But as soon as they started to talk to each other and started submitting estimates of how many jelly beans were in the jar, in other words, they didn't behave independently, the accuracy went to hell. And they actually were off by about 50% when they started talking to each other. And so this is something that's well known, is when people start communicating with each other, they start engaging in groupthink, and their accuracy deteriorates greatly. The guy who really demonstrated this best was a man by the name of Solomon Ash, a psychologist by the name of Solomon Ash, who gave people a task to match line lengths, which is kind of difficult to do in a podcast or on the radio. But it was a simple visual task that you would get right about 98% of the time. When he put the subjects into a group of other people who were actually his cohorts or his confederates who would shout out wrong answers, the accuracy deteriorated greatly. So the bottom line is when you put people in groups, their forecasting skills and their analytical skills just go to hell.
Because they're mimicking or they're relying on what everybody else thinks rather than what they think. Is that the idea?
Exactly. And so you see that, of course, in finance with manias and depressions, and you also see it in religion as well.
So do mimicry and narrative explain the followers of Hitler and Hirohito and religious cults?
Yes, absolutely. One of the most important and disturbing books I think that any person can read was Lawrence Rees's description of the concentration camp guards at Auschwitz. It's a book called Auschwitz, A New History. And, you know, he basically echoes Hannah Arendt's concept of the banality of evil. The people who manned the concentration camps were not evil monsters. They were ordinary people who had swallowed the narrative because they had heard it from everybody else around them. The Jews were burning and they had to be exterminated. And they all thought they were doing good work. They all thought they were ethical, moral people who were making the world a better place. It's a truly frightening book. And what it tells you is that we're all capable of the most horrific acts, including genocide.
Well, it's the cruelty. The cruelty that is what gets me. How can they deny the cruelty of those actions? How does that groupthink surmount that?
Well, if you think about it, you know, we all happily eat chickens and hamburger. And that's because we dehumanized farm animals. Well, if you put another group of people into the same category as farm animals, it's very easy to slaughter them. And again, this is if you think about it in terms of evolutionary psychology, it makes perfect sense. Okay, you have competing tribes or bands, and the bands that are going to compete most successfully against other bands are bands that raise the status of people within that group, whether they're Aryans or members of a given tribe. And if you if you select for tribes that make it easier to slaughter people who are in other tribes, to dehumanize them and demonize them and otherize them, and it makes it easier to exterminate them. And so that unfortunately is a characteristic that Mother Nature selected, because they're going to be able to outcompete the other tribes.
Wow, that's really scary, because it implies that any of us might be susceptible then to to groupthink if we're not thinking for ourselves. You write in your book that you think one of the most important problems or changes in America is the rise of evangelical Protestantism. And you say this has profound risks for American policy, like in the Middle East and the control of strategic weapons. How does evangelical Protestantism make those risks greater?
Well, we can talk about that in two different domains. And to talk about the domain of Middle Eastern politics, there is this theological belief system called premillennial dispensationalism, which is kind of a mouthful. And really, the average secular American is totally unaware of it. It's a narrative that centers around the return of the Jews to the Middle East, which, of course, did happen in the 20th century, and in the building of a third temple, which hasn't happened yet, fortunately, followed by Armageddon, which almost certainly would happen if we built if the Jews built a third temple, and then a nuclear Holocaust. But fortunately, if you're an evangelical Christian and you've been saved, you are going to be extracted through the rapture before, you know, the excrement hits the ventilating system. And so you will be saved. The Jews have a particularly interesting fate in that particular schema, which is that a third of Jews will convert to Christianity and be saved, but the other two-thirds will burn who don't accept Jesus. So there you have it. You know, your in-group does fine, and if you're not a member of the in-group, you're in the out-group, and too bad for you.
Sounds familiar. So
yeah, exactly. And the most amazing thing is that this is a schema or a belief system that most Americans, most secular Americans, I should say, are totally unaware of. Of course, it's second nature if you're an evangelical Christian. Now, where this gets into geopolitics, more broader geopolitics, is even more interesting, which is that one of the hotbeds of this belief system happens to be the United States Air Force, and particularly the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, which has had been the subject of any number of scandals, sexual abuse scandals, and also religiously based scandals as well. Well, who controls the bulk of our strategic weapons? Okay.
All you need is
one harebrained, weapons officer like Jack D. Ripper in the Stanley Kubrick movie, all hell breaks loose.
Well,
so
thank you.
Let me just quote. You say, as the old joke goes, a delusion shared by hundreds of people is called a cult, whereas one shared by millions is called a religion.
Thank you, William J. Bernstein. It's a fascinating book. The book is called The Delusions of Crowds, Why People Go Mad in Groups. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And we also want to thank our listeners to Free Thought Radio in Philadelphia, listeners to WOOM, listeners in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, to WZML, listeners right here in Madison, Wisconsin, to WIDE and WMUU, in Janesville, Wisconsin, to WADR, Community Radio, in Bryan, Texas, KEOS, San Marcos, Texas, KZSM, Columbia, Missouri, KOPN, Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, in Bellows Falls, Vermont, WOOL, Black Sheep Radio. Hello to listeners in Kingston, Rhode Island, to WRIU, and in Ithaca, New York, to WRFI. And, of course, many thousands of you listen on the podcast, so please give us a thumbs up on your provider. Tell your friends and family to learn more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
And find out more about the new podcast, We Dissent. It's actually a year old this spring, featuring female attorneys working for secular organizations. And find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at our website, ffrf.org. We gladly send you a sample of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, and our brochure of about 47 years of activism. And you can just join us on the join link. We invite you to tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.